Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Lucas and Vincent were not in the mainstream of gay life.
I was saving body parts such as skulls.
Doesn't it bother you that he's a fag?
You have done me a great service. Now I must service you.
The drugs were always a cry for attention, for somebody to pay attention to me before I, kill somebody.
You can imagine what it smells like if you go into a closed room.
Something is trying to get inside my body.
Yeah, she's female and she's waiting for you in the cabana. And you want to sleep with me.
Buckle up, sodomites, and welcome to the Sinister Sissies podcast, your guide to true crime, horror, and everything man on man and macabre. I'm Jared, your master of depravity, staring at the beautiful face of my filthy little slave, Sam Hamilton.
I love it when you lie to me, master. I have never.
You look so sad as I was saying that. I was like, no, you have a beautiful face. You were getting compliments on the Instagram, from what I've been told.
I just feel I'm just very disheveled. If you could look into my camera, people, I look like I've been through
it. The Patreons get the raw.
Well, I hope you like it raw, guys, because this is as raw as it gets. Straight from work to here. I did fall asleep and then my phone beeped and it was Jared.
Oh, God, really? Have you literally just woken up?
Yes, I was like, I'm just going to rest my head for a few seconds. And a few seconds turned into,
It's going to be a very awake Sam podcast record.
I'm perky. I smell some orange juice. I'm ready to go.
Okay. So we are doing another killer episode. In fact, potentially one of the most prolific serial killers ever documented.
He's in the top three ever. My microphone shaky here. He's in the top three ever body count wise. So yeah, he's made a name for himself. Although no one knows his name. What is his name?
He is a lesser known serial killer. I don't think many people know about Louis Alfredo Garavito. Yes.
Like, I only found out about him because I believe Finley actually told me.
Oh, there you go. Finley, listen to the podcast that was done on The Family, if you want to hear his voice. So Louis Alfredo Garavito, also known as La Bestia or The Beast, is potentially...
Triplin, which means goofy.
Oh, yes. We'll get to that because that's a creepy detail of this that, like, he is suspected of killing over 200 young boys in Colombia. He is one of the lesser known killers. And in fact, there's not been a lot documented about him, despite the fact that he confessed and is still alive.
It's quite difficult, I think, as well, because he's Colombian. And a lot of the interviews aren't in English that you can find online. So, maybe if we have any, international listeners who can decipher some of these interviews, hit us up.
Look, Sinister Sissies doesn't have the budget for a translator, so.
Unfortunately not. And the only language I can speak is failed romance, so.
I did think, and I don't know what you think about this, Sam, are we going to get shit for including him as a sinister sissy person? Because he wasn't like an active gay man as such.
Well, he didn't identify as a gay man, but he only killed males ever. So, you know, I think he fits the bill.
And yeah, he definitely wasn't interested in women. I will say
no,
that.
No, I mean, he had I will get to this, but he had a lot of girlfriends and most of them were like, yeah, we didn't sleep together.
So I think we might have to, you know, claim him as part of the team as much as we would not want to on this one. So here's what we know about Garavito. He was born on the 25th of January, 1957 in Genova, Colombia. Garavito's father was an alcoholic who was frequently abusive towards him. There is some confusion, or it's not very clear who Garavito's biological mother was, but it is suspected that it was a local street sex worker from the area. It is documented that Garavito was forced by his father to watch his mother sleep with clients. And those same clients would also sexually abuse Garavito.
It's also now, speculated that potentially his dad also gave him a bit of a touch up as well. So
in terms of sexual, yeah. So there was physical violence, verbal violence, sexual.
He tied him to a tree once with a belt and beat him. So he was not a pleasant or nurturing father by any means.
And the sexual abuse extended outside his mother's clients and also outside the home. He was sexually abused by a neighbor from the ages of 12 to 14 as well. And as Sam said, he only received 5 years of schooling left home at 16 in order to get out of the environment.
Case study is like, how do you create a monster? You know, like he went through every kind of abuse you could think of and look where things ended up.
I mean, we've seen this with a couple of them as well. Some of the serial killers that we see come from like fairly normal backgrounds and you kind of like, well, maybe something biological has happened there. And then many of them come from these sorts of backgrounds where you're like, wow, you've created a monster.
Yes, definitely not envious of his upbringing.
Garavito's sexually sadistic behavior began when he was 16. His father interrupted him as he was trying to assault a six-year-old. He was kicked out of home at that point, and he came back shortly after and then left on his own volition. But I think this is indicative of the kind of person his father was. His father was annoyed and told him that was only okay if there are no women around.
But still, that's still some more, you know, like those formative years, still having really fucked up behavior being modeled back. Like kids aren't off hands, you know, only if there's no one else, if there's nothing better, which also kind of backs up the claims of him abusing Garavito, because that's a concerning attitude to have.
As we've kind of already flagged, Garavito's sexuality is kind of a point of contention in terms of how we want to categorize it. He has spoken about that at a very young age, he was exposed to heterosexual pornography and was disgusted by it. He had had relationships with women, but most of the women said that it wasn't physical, that he kind of avoided it.
A lot of the women he dated actually had children, and apparently he was very loving and generous to them. He had a very specific MO of victims that he would target. So I guess we'll get into that. But maybe these children just didn't fit that MO.
No, I think he had that classic serial killer thing of, you know, I think it would be not a stretch to say Garavito is probably a sociopath. He has a number of other mental health things that we'll talk about in a moment, but I think sociopath is there. And that a lot of serial killers and a lot of sociopaths, they do that thing where they try and preserve a certain happy home life. And then when they get those violent urges, they externalize it from the home. So that pattern isn't surprising to me. He clearly had pedophilic interests at a very young age, and they tended to be homosexual pedophilic types
Also at a
interests.
Young age, he, as is common with many killers we've covered here as well, he dissected some birds.
Mm.
So yeah, he had that interest in violence linked to kind of, I guess, sexuality. And I guess not with dissecting birds, but yeah, because there were... Science,
I mean, potentially, yeah, that's the science, thing. Yeah, like, maybe. That formative, like, childhood wave of relieving tension, and tying that sense of relieving tension to violence, I think, is that thing that you often see. And that's the reason why, what's that triad called? That there's a psychopath triad, which talks about bedwetting, starting fires, and animal cruelty.
Yeah.
And all of those things, the things that those three things have in common is that they become a kind of obsession to do with relieving tension. So the bedwetting theory that I've heard is that children hold on to their urine as much as possible until they can't control it. They set fires because that's an uncontrollable thing, or they kill animals because they're kind of, it's like they can't contain any tension within themselves. And
I only did two of these three things growing up. I can't tell you which, but.
I was fascinated by fire. I don't think I set fires. I'll say that. I'm sure I wet the bed as a child.
But I had incidents where I learned that's the line, like that's no more of this. Because I lit a fire of my friends and the fire brigade came and it was like a whole thing. And that was like, okay, this is done. This is finished.
Oh my God. Okay,
like breaking and entering places. Then my friends got caught by the cops. Luckily,
I was also a breaking and entering. If you want to hear the rest of these stories, we're going to tell those stories in the Patreon episode.
Great. My criminal history is about to be public domain.
After Garavito left home, as I said, he worked as a street vendor. He was selling, oddly, religious icons and prayer cards as a form of employment, which is kind of ironic in many ways.
He was hustling. Yeah. And he did go on to become a Satanist, but, you know, sometimes yes. You've got to wear that mask to make that money.
I was talking with Sam before we started recording that there's just this off reference that Garavito in adulthood became interested in the occult and Satanism, which is really fascinating, but I can't find any details anywhere about what that means.
Yeah, nothing really to back it up, but we'll take it. It was in multiple sources, so maybe it was said in like an interview or something.
Garavito's... Well, that fascination with the occult may be related to the fact that Garavito in adulthood began to develop symptoms of psychosis. He had described to mental health experts that he had malicious voices in his head. In fact, he was hospitalized for 30 days.
Apparently he spent collectively 5 years in and out of psych wards. So
yeah,
quite a long time.
So, I mean, clearly this is some sort of psychiatric illness. I'm not sure. I haven't seen any commentary that it was something like schizophrenia or anything like that. He was an alcoholic and he was a quite heavy alcoholic, and you can have alcohol-induced psychosis if you're a heavy alcoholic. So I don't know if it's related to that or if it's something kind of more complicated going on with him. Garavito had a series of failed relationships with women, and the reason they failed was a combination of the fact that he had serious mental health issues and that he was not sexually into women all that much. Said that he started molesting children in the late 1980s. At one point, he was molesting a child at least once a month. As would become his murder victims, he would deliberately target children that were homeless or were vulnerable.
He also idolized Hitler. I know this is a bit of an offhand.
he did. That's another little thing that is kind of offhandedly referenced. And then it's like, oh yeah, he was also very into Hitler.
Well, apparently as well, he would replicate in the early days of his abusing, he would try and emulate the kind of abuse done to him.
Mm.
And I guess it obviously took on a life of its own as time went on.
It definitely escalated in the late 1980s because he moved from just molesting these young boys to torturing them with razors. And he would document what he did in a notebook. He would list the names of the kids that he assaulted and tortured in a notebook, and he would pray over these names whilst kind of
himself.
Yeah, so kind of self-harming himself, which yeah. I'm not sure if is an indication of regret or is an indication of, I mean, this is such a fucking fractured psyche at this point that I don't know if we can necessarily interpret what's going on. So we said that Garavito had a number of relationships, and he would avoid sleeping with the women in his relationship by saying that he needed to travel for work. So he would travel all around Colombia and send money back to the women that he was with. And that's kind of, that was a combination of a way for him to avoid sexual intimacy with the women and also a way for him to prey on homeless boys in different areas. Locals who knew Garavito described him as a friendly man, and that's how local children nicknamed him. Is it Triblin? Triblin?
Triblin, yeah.
Triblin, yes, Goofy. Which, as Sam said, is the Spanish name for Goofy, which is, I don't know why that's so disturbing, but that's really like,
ugh.
And it's because of this kind of like affable, lovable public persona that there was witnesses who saw Garavito walk off with these homeless boys, and they just didn't think of anything, you know, that anything was wrong, because he was able to cultivate this really kind of friendly personality. Yeah. Garavito committed his first murder on the 2nd of October 1992, when he saw a teenager named Juan Carlos passing a bar. Garavito would later claim that the sight of the boy in the moonlight awoke something evil in him.
That can't be denied, because he never stopped after this. It was like 7 years of Kill, Kill, Kill.
Well, it is. It did seem to be that he crossed a line, and once he crossed the line, he couldn't stop. Juan Carlos's body was found 3 days later, showing visible signs of torture, including missing teeth and mutilated genitals. Less than a week after his first kill, Garavito killed again and again and again and again.
Well, he confessed to 140 murders, was charged of 138 murders, and was suspected of or charged of 172 murders. So it's not like our usual episodes where we can go through all the victims one by one, because that we'd be here for
Special.
Plus, we don't know the identities of a lot of them, because he targeted homeless boys. So
the only consistent estimate that I've heard is likely more than 200, which I think is assuming that the charged and suspected murders were just the ones that there was sufficient evidence for, yeah. And there's likely to be more than that. And
some people think it could be up to 400. So yeah, he knocked off quite a few. It was very, very active.
It was between the years of 1992 and 1999 that Garavito's suspected of killing a number of these children, most of them aged between the ages of 8 and 13 years old. All of the children had indications of rape and torture, and certainly in the later years, many of them were decapitated. And that seemed to be a shift in how he operated.
And he enjoyed inserting things into the anuses, as one of the many things that he shares of our other serial killer alumni on this show. He was quite smart in a couple of ways, because he had 5 or 6 disguises he would alternate between when he would go to different areas to pick up boys. They were like, he was like a priest, a farmer, a drug dealer, an elderly man, a homeless man, and a gambler, I think.
Yeah.
And he would go to, I think there's 32 police districts in Colombia, and I can't remember the exact number off the top of my head. I'm sure I have it in my notes somewhere. But he killed within like, say, 12 or 13 districts. So he was really spreading out his murder seed, and it took years and years for them to even start to think it was the same person. So he was quite intelligent.
And this was during the time where Colombia was going through quite extensive civil war. I mean, my understanding is that Colombia still has some ongoing problems as well.
11 of the 32 police districts he killed in.
It wasn't uncommon during this time for young boys to be homeless or needy. And it's argued, it's suspected that he would lure these boys to certain locations by either offering jobs or food, and then he would do what he wanted to them. And he was very, I don't want to say intelligent, because that sounds like a confident or, you know, complimentary word, but like he picked his locations in a really methodical way. And in fact, when he confessed later on, he was able to say exactly where each body was. Like, as in, he had almost I don't want to say a photographic memory, but he knew the geography of every single victim. So yeah. He
documented things very well.
Because everything was spread out, the police took a very, very long time to try and tie everything together. You know, these could be a series of separate incidents rather than some sort of serial killer. It wasn't until 1997 where a mass grave was discovered with 41 children in it that they started to realize, oh, okay, we have a serial killer.
Yeah.
And that's where the rhetoric about La Bestia, or the beast, started to come into play, because they realized, okay, this is the work of a single individual, and we need to start tying these bodies that we're finding together. And in 1999, the police got their strongest indication of who this was. So a note was found at the crime scene of one of the victims, and it had an address on it. This address was linked to one of Garavito's girlfriends. Now, he hadn't been with this girlfriend for a while, is my understanding.
He hadn't seen her for months, I think.
Yeah. So when police contacted her, she was like, I mean, I haven't seen this guy, but he left a whole bunch of his stuff here. And when they found his stuff consisted of pictures of young boys, so child pornography, detailed journals of murders, tallies of victims, all of those sorts of things. He probably should have kept that stuff
buried like in the mass grave or something. I don't know, dug it up later. Don't just leave it around your girlfriend's place. So you don't
trust your ex with your murder. and also, how has she not looked at this?
And being respect like, their partner's privacy. You know, I wouldn't rewrite.
But they were together at this point. He was an ex at this point.
I think they were together, but she hadn't heard from him. So maybe he ghosted her.
I think he had a couple of girls on the go, maybe.
Ended. So, you know, she was like hating on him, but enough, I guess, that she gave his stuff up to the cops.
Mm.
So she must have suspected there was something awry going on. We can only speculate, of course, but.
So this obviously let the police know that Garavito was likely La Bestia. They went to his residence, and he had left at this point, gone to another location. And it was on the 22nd of April, 1999, that Garavito was actually arrested for an unrelated charge of attempting to rape a teenage boy.
I really feel like Garavito is like a best dog for like killers. Like all these things, everything that happens to everyone is just kind of happening to him. Like, you know, how many of our killers have been caught?
Unrelated charge.
Or something like that. And yeah. It's like, oh, you're the murderer.
Yeah. So they ended up bringing Garavito in, and that, on the police system, got flagged, and they started to interrogate him. He initially denied any wrongdoing to do with the murders, but as soon as the police started to describe the details of the killings, he broke down in tears and confessed.
He didn't confess immediately. He had quite a visceral reaction, but then what happened was he had a very specific eye condition, and he left his glasses at one of the scenes, so that wasn't so smart. And to try to catch him out in the prison, they eye tested all the prisoners so he wouldn't be suspicious. And they found that he had this condition, so he would have needed these particular glasses. And I think that's what they actually used to get the confession out of him. But then he was quite cooperative, I think.
Yeah, so ultimately Garavito confessed to murdering 140 children and was charged with killing 172. As I noted, he is likely to have killed much more. This is just the numbers that we have.
And he was found guilty of killing 138. So I don't know what happens to the other two, but maybe they just couldn't find the bodies or something.
Well, one of the biggest things they have is that they couldn't identify certain victims. And so establishing narratives in relation to certain victims is difficult if you can't say who they were, where they were, those sorts of things. So the sentencing of Garavito is rather interesting because he was initially sentenced to 1,853 years and 9 days in prison.
Which was irrelevant though, right? Because at the time, the maximum you could be sentenced in Colombia was 40 years. So it was kind of like a title-only sentence.
Well, so 40 years, and then the initial rule is if you cooperate with the police, your maximum then becomes 22 years.
Which he did. So
it did. It got reduced down. However, there's now there's a law in place now that says that justice decisions shouldn't favor people that harm children. And as a result of that, although he was initially going to be eligible for parole in 2023, so Gary Vito is still alive, and he, you know, there was a lot of concern that he was going to get out in 2023. It's now looking likely that he won't be, and that he will die in prison as a result of that. So that was a huge controversy about Colombia about that he could be released because of this law.
Well, especially because his intention for when he was released from prison was to become a politician and to make his number one agenda the protection of children.
Yes, he's been doing very strange things in prison. But from my understanding, you know, my understanding of the law in a country that I don't know, that's mostly in a language that I don't understand, so, you know, you can take that as you will, is that because of this particular provision that's all about if you harm children, these rules won't work in your favor. That means that he's not likely to be released anytime soon. It is most likely to die in prison.
I did hear a good urban legend about him.
Oh, yeah? Tell me.
That he was taking the organs from the children because he would often, like, remove organs or, like, make incisions and stuff, and he was selling them on the black market.
Mm. But
it's basically been like rebuked, that's the word. Because like the surgical incisions were like too shitty, basically. There was none of the precision involved. There's no way that those organs could have been saved. Like maybe he kept some souvenirs or something, or just
he's had 5 years of education. I don't think he'd be able to pull that off.
I don't think in grade 5 in primary school they teach you how to
also sample. What's the demand for children's organs on the market?
Well, I don't know. I did watch Don't Breathe 2 this week. And spoiler, it is about a woman trying to steal a child's heart. So maybe you can use children's organs for your adult body. I don't know.
I would think they'd be too small, but maybe not. What do I know?
Just watch Don't Breathe 2, okay? You'll be informed of everything. You're in prison. Gary Vito lives quite an isolated life because he's a child molester. He's segregated from other prisoners, and the guards apparently really like him. So take from that what you will. Well, they think he's very friendly and, like, relaxed or something.
It just makes me concerned about the guards that they have in that prison.
Well, I guess if he's not inherently violent to them, you know, they're not his choice of victims either. So they're probably in safe hands there.
Thank you for listening to the Sinister Sissies podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at Sinister Sissies. You can follow me on Twitter at Jared Bartle. That's Jared with a Y. You can follow Sam on Instagram at Sinister_Sissies.
And I'd really appreciate it if you did follow me, because in October, I haven't even told Jared this, I'm going to be doing a daily 30-second horror movie review. And I'd like
us
all to watch the movies together. It'll be fun. So please follow.
I'm up for that. You did like kind of a photo review.
Yeah, I did the photos, but this last October, year. I'm going to be doing a 30-second on-the-go review. So whatever I'm doing at a certain time of day, I'm just going to give you the movie review. If I'm doing my grocery shopping, I'm for a run, and the review will just be coming. So,
he's a social media star, everyone.
Clearly, with our 12 followers.
We have more than 12 followers.
Yeah, well, you know what I mean.
So Sinister_Sissies on Instagram. We would really appreciate if you would support the show on Patreon. You get access to after shows as well as early episodes, and you also get the Zoom version of the episodes if you want to see our beautiful faces. Until next time, though, stay sinister.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.